Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to our first installment of Dante's Breakdown. Today, you're going to be joined by myself, Justin Jett, as well as my partners, Justin Benjamin and Robert Karn. I'll allow them to introduce themselves a little bit first.
Whoop, whoop! This is Justin Benjamin. I'm really excited to unscramble Cantos 3. I think this podcast is going to be a great listen for you guys out there. So, on to Robert.
What's up, guys? Robert Karn here. Can't wait. I'm with my two best buds. We're just going to break down Cantos 3 and everything Dante has in store for us.
So just as my two partners had touched on briefly, we're going to be talking about Canto 3 of Dante's Inferno today. And to start things off, we're going to be giving just a brief overview summary of what had happened. So in Canto 3, we begin with Virgil and Dante entering the gates of hell. And upon entering, they can hear screams of torture. And Virgil explains to Dante that these screams are coming from souls of people that are resting in kind of an in-between place of heaven and hell known as the Ante Inferno. And in the Ante Inferno, these people, they never performed any good nor evil throughout their lives. So that's the reason that they rest here. They continue on to introduce Dante to what is called the River Acheron. And this river is the border of hell. A crowd of newly dead souls is going to be taken across the river, and Dante meets an old man, Charon. And Charon's able to recognize that Dante is a living soul, and he tells him to keep away from the dead. And after that, Charon troubles him no longer, and that wraps up the events of Canto 3. Now I'm going to lead this over to Robert, who's going to get the discussion started.
That was an excellent summary, Justin.
Thank you.
First question of the story is, what importance do you think the repetition in the opening segments stands for in Cantos 3? In line 1, Dante says, through me. Line 2 starts out with through me, and line 3 starts out with through me. Benji, what do you think the repetition stands for?
So, yeah, I think that's a great observation that you made, because obviously the author did that on purpose, and just like everything else that the author writes. But I think the repetition of those two words, through me, is basically breaking the ice and showing that something very grave is about to take part in this Cantos 3. And when it says to the city dolent, eternal dole, and people lost, the end of those phrases, I think it's about to show that they're about to enter an evil side of this chapter.
So yeah,
that's why I think it was.
That's a good observation. And then, you know, going off of that, when you look apart from the specifics of Dante Inferno, you just look at authors using literary devices in general. When it comes to repetition, this is generally used when an author wants to make the reader aware that the subject matter is something that they should be remembering and something that should have an emphasis on it. So I think, again, here, that's what the author is trying to reveal, is that whatever he's talking about when he repeats this phrase, through me, through me, through me, that this is going to be an important part of the story that we're going to be returning to.
This is my outside source from the Golden Bow, Literature and the Idea of Immortality by Kenneth Klotz. This is a very wise man with the analogies and relations he makes. So he says, from Virgil's great epic, descent to hell is easy. All night, all day, black Pluto's door stands wide. To recall the step, escape to air and sky. This is the task and toil. And Mr. Klotz refers to the Odyssey and how Odysseus experiences the same numbing horror before and during the trip to the underworld. And this really relates to Dante's persona as he cowers before the gate of hell. And I think that Greek mythology and mythology in general, there's always some point in the story that reflects on the gate of hell and the numbing pain that it causes to that main character before the journey starts.
Yeah, I guess that's a good thing to point out, that there's that commonality in the two Greek mythology stories, that hell kind of plays the same role all throughout and serves the same theme or message.
But one thing I want to point out to both of you is that The Odyssey was written 2,000 years before Dante's Inferno, and like the adventures for him. So I think that's pretty interesting how he's still had that numbing feeling and is kind of in that same manner in the story. I don't know what you guys have to say about that.
No, it's just interesting to see that parallel between the two stories, regardless of how far apart and distant they were in time periods, that their mythology was able to uphold and still kind of have held portrayed the same and induced the same effects on the hero of the story.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and a really good question you bring up, because Dante's Inferno was obviously made many years after the Odyssey, but the Odyssey was made before the Aeneid, which Virgil is in the Dante's Inferno. So I think it all kind of plays a part and it plays a role, and all the stories kind of intertwine with the same kind of storyline, an epic poem.
I'm just going to go a little quick sidetrack. This just reminds me of just like history in general, religious or anything. How it's hard to trust the stories of people, but when things are written down in a book form, it's hard to question the reality of it. Even though perception isn't the true reality, it's still some sort of a fact and truth, which we don't need to delve into what's a fact and what's false, but it's just interesting to see that.
So while we're here and we're talking about outside ideas from other sources and such, I also was able to find an outside source that was very, very intriguing for me to read. It was by Michael Agelman, and it was called The Heirs of Canto 3 of Dante's Inferno. In this journal, we're able to read an excerpt that Michael wrote, and the excerpt reads as such. Let me find it. It is, Dante is the central man of all the world of our literature. His vision is of a world that is, in some sense, always going to hell. All ages are acquisitant from eternity, but which always has it in the possibility for individuals to go the other way. We pursue folly in groups. We approach truth, goodness, and well-being one by one. This is a perennial view of the pilgrim's process. So what do you guys think that through this statement, Michael Agelman was trying to get you to think?
I think that he's almost trying to explain that, like, at some point in all of our lives, there's going to be some demon or evil that's going to be present in our own adventure, but I think it really relates to Dante, because obviously he was at the gate of hell, and same with Odysseus. And I think that he's just, again, pointing out that parallel.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point to make, because if you were to read on, you'll see that he continues on with the quote to say, the perennial philosophy is the idea that the good is indeed something objective, and that reason is the organ whereby it is apprehended. So I think what he means is that a lot of things in this world, you know, like we discussed, for one, truth is subjunctive. A lot of things are subjunctive. A lot of things come down to just beliefs of individuals. And obviously with the amount of people in the world, everyone's going to believe differently. But I think what he's trying to say is that what's good and what's evil is not a subjunctive concept. It's objective. It's not really open to discretion. It's set in stone. You know, good deeds and good actions and bad deeds and good actions, like, they're known. People should be aware of those. And yeah,
that's a good point.
You know, they're having being able to distinguish between what's a good decision, what's a bad moral decision. You know, it's not easy, but it's also not possible for one to be able to say that, you know, they were able to subjectively justify a moral decision and say that it was good. I think what he means is, no, that was bad. You knew that was bad because there was no question whether or not that was a bad choice.
All right, welcome back, folks. We got three questions about Cantos 3 that are very important to the story. Justin, I'm going to start with you. In the story, there's a quote saying, all hope abandon, ye who enter in. on the entrance of the gates of hell. What do you think these words represent, and what is the importance of putting it into the story?
Well, it's important to acknowledge that this is hell that we're talking about, literal hell. And I think it's appropriate for hell to make those entering aware that you should not be hopeful. This is not a place of hope. This is not a place to cherish. This is hell, literally hell. So, you know, the reasons for why it's posted up there, kind of uncertain, but I think it's just a kind of like a disclaimer. I mean, I guess it just serves as such, just letting the people that are entering, you know, letting them know, like, hey, this place sucks. Don't wish for the best because it's not coming.
It's a great response. My next question is for Benji. What do you think the gladflies and hornets who are constantly bothering the souls of the dead represent, and why do you think they only affect those considered miscreants?
Well, I think it's almost an obvious answer in my opinion, but with this old writing, nothing's really certain. But my best guess at that is I think that those hornets are always – it's a repetitive reminder to those that are in hell that, yeah, you – like what you have done, it sucks. And like what Jet says, it's hell. Nothing's good there. And what I kind of like about it is I think it's a good reminder for those people who've gotten themselves there. So I think that's my answer to it.
It's another fantastic response. All right, my third and final question for Jet. In the story, Dante makes an allusion to the Bible and Adam and Eve when he's describing the spirits falling from the banks of Acheron. What do you think this represents and like the importance it plays in the overall story of the Christian mythos?
Well, this was interesting to see, first and foremost, because the allusion between a Christian mythos and Greek mythos, kind of a rare sighting, very, very different belief systems. However, I think the allusion kind of represents the story of Adam and Eve being a story of the difference between good and evil and, you know, temptation and how temptation plays a role in the distinction between good and evil. And the stories are just very similar in that theme. So that's the breakdown of said illusion in my perspective.
It's a good point. Very good. Well put. Well, you know what? Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Break it down. Count on three. Out of here. Justin Jett, Rob Kahn, Justin Benjamin, signing off. Listen next time. Goodbye.